Welcome to this week's issue of 10 Minute Tickets Talks. I got a great guest this week, Rich Bellow, who's the Director of Team Services for the ECHL. The ECHL is one of the few leagues that is actually playing and having some pretty good success. Most of their teams are playing the limited capacity. And we're going to have Rich talk about where they are right now, what their teams are doing, and then more importantly, what they've learned while they've been playing and how they're preparing for next year. Rich, welcome. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you having me and excited to get into this conversation and hopefully be able to help some folks out there.
Awesome. So talk a little bit about what your role is with the team services and what your guys' playing situation is this year. How many teams are playing? What are some of the restrictions they're playing under? And what are some of the mitigation rules they put in place?
Yeah, so basically my role with the league office and team services is to try and work with all of the teams in our league, understand the things that they're doing from a sales and marketing perspective that are working, and then share those things with the other teams in the league so they could hopefully learn from those ideas, implement them the ways that would work in their market. So a lot of best practice sharing. I also handle the reporting so we could keep track of all the different ticket sales and corporate sponsorship sales ideas and keep a good handle on how teams are having the success within different categories in each of those distinct revenue drivers. So with regards to this season, we have 14 teams that once it's all said and done will be playing. Our 14th will be starting next week. So the 13 that have played so far and the 14th as well, they'll all be playing under reduced capacities. Looking at the numbers versus last year, capacity-wise, on average, we're going to be at just under 2,700 is our average capacity for 2021 season, when last year that capacity number was closer to 7,300. So we're down about 63% versus total capacity last year. And that's due to the things that I'm sure everyone's aware of. We're doing pod seating where, you know, that's where we're losing all the seats essentially. And everyone, I think just about every team has mask mandates in place where whenever you're in the building, other than if you're eating or drinking, you have to have the mask on. And those have been the main things that we've done, that the teams have done to mitigate the threat of the pandemic, and that's how it's affected our capacity so far.
And how has the fan response been? Our teams, even with the great thing about limited capacity, it's a lot easier to sell out. Are you seeing positive response, concern, worry, sellouts? What's that look like?
Yeah, the fan response has been great, and we kind of expected that going into the start of this season, and part of the way that we led into preparing for this season was we had a survey out that we asked all of our teams to submit through their social media and email marketing channels, where we basically got about close to 9,000 responses from fans throughout the league in regards to how much they missed ECHL hockey, how excited they were to come back, things of that nature. And the responses were all positive. It was an average of, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you miss ECHL hockey? We had an average score of 8 there. And we had something over 80% of the respondents said they were at least very likely or extremely likely to return to ECHL games once we resumed play and had fans in the stands. So based on that survey, we were anticipating that we would get a good response, and once the games have begun, the numbers have told us as much. We're at now, as of yesterday's games, 47 sellouts so far. We've had just over 120 games played. So we're looking at over a third of our games have been sold out so far this season. And then in comparison to last season, which was obviously cut a little bit short from the pandemic, but we totaled 90 sellouts last year, and we're already over half of that, and we're just about not even 2 months into our season. So the response has been great. The fans have been eager to come out. They've come out, and for the great majority, we haven't had any issues with the safety precautions that have been put into place as well.
that amazing? Like, there was a survey some point last summer or fall that fans were surveyed and said 72% of them were not going to come back to sporting events because of fear of safety. Yet what you're seeing is the exact opposite. 80% are saying, heck yeah, I want to go. I can't wait to get there. I think that shows, quite frankly, it shows sometimes survey data, and who's asking the questions may not know exactly what they're talking about. So they're playing limited capacity. They're creating a sense of urgency, a sense of demand. What are some of the best practices you've seen from your teams related to fan engagement, sharing the idea that they're selling games out and trying to get people to buy further in advance?
I think one of the things to me that's been the most effective and I think the most eye-opening is when we've had our teams record videos either at games or on a Zoom call with their fans that have been going to the games, and they're getting the reactions from the fans about how safe they feel at the games, what safety precautions have been taken by the team to ensure that everyone who attends the games is safe and feels safe and can still have a good time at the games. And we've seen the teams make those videos from their fans and then post them on social media to try and promote that idea that, hey, it's safe to come to our games. Look, it's not just us telling you, it's our fans, people that have actually done it. They've come to the games and experienced what we're doing, and they feel safe about it. So I think those have been great examples of ways to try and make potential fans feel more comfortable about the experience and about how safe it is. And then I think in terms of at the games, they're obviously different in terms of the engagement level and what the teams are able to do with fans in arena. But I think just being creative, using social media, having contests, and just engaging the fans as best they can may not be the same as it's always been, but still making them feel like they're a part of the game, a part of the experience, and that they're being heard and recognized by the teams. I think that's what's been successful.
And now if you look back, what has not been successful? Now that you've been playing for a month and a half or so, what would you have told, what have you guys learned in that month and a half period that if you could rewind, you'd start over, you'd do differently? This will help our teams that haven't started playing yet, especially those in the baseball world, to make sure that they don't make the same mistakes.
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake and the biggest downfall that we've seen so far has been group ticket sales. And I know what you'd probably think when you first hear that is, well, how are people going to go out as a group to a game, especially with pod seating and a lot of group organizations not really doing any of their own meetings? And that's true. So it's definitely not a situation where you could have normal, typical groups all seated together, all doing experiences together the way they normally would. But the idea that you cannot reach out to your group leaders or companies or large organizations that you've worked with in the past and present to them the opportunity to have, I guess I would call it a pseudo group, where they send information out to all of their members and they have the opportunity to purchase tickets individually within pods. So it's just their family that would be sitting in a pod. But we could do it in a way with technology now, specifically with, you know, companies like Fevo, or if you have Ticketmaster Arctix or any of the major ticketing providers, I think you're able to do it where you could essentially dedicate a section to a specific group. Maybe it's the Boy Scouts, or maybe it's a big school, or it's a big church in your market. You can dedicate that section to them. And yeah, the people in the group may not all be sitting right next to each other, but they're a row away and no one else is in between where their next member of their group and that family is. They could still talk to each other and be close to each other and feel like they're kind of having that group experience. So to me, that has been the opportunity that I think we could have pursued a little bit sooner. I think our teams are starting to see it now, and they're starting to have more success with selling to groups like that. But if they had had those conversations during the summertime or even into the fall, since we didn't start until December, they could have put those things in place earlier so that they could have done more of it throughout this season.
That's a great point. Planning ahead knowing even this summer, it's going to be a little bit unusual, a little bit strange, plan ahead, contacting those group leaders. You're not going to get all of them to come back. But if you got 50% of them to come back, especially if you're only playing to 50% capacity, you're still going to be creating sellouts. I think that's hugely important. One more thing related to this year's games, obviously with reduced capacity crowds, roughly 33% or so, the game atmosphere is a little bit different. The sold-out hockey game, everybody's yelling and screaming and having a blast, doesn't exist. How have you advised teams to change or adjust their game atmosphere and what they do during stoppages and play, timeouts, that type of thing?
Yeah, it's tough because nothing that we could do is really going to replicate the experience that fans are used to coming to a sold-out game and having it be really loud. But I think the best that we could do in regards to that is to have them feel as though they're participating in some way or another. It's not going to get as loud, but if you're doing the dance cams, or if you're doing the scream-o-meter or whatever it might be, you might not want to have them scream, but clapping, so that they are still engaged and they still feel as though their participation in what you're doing from game operations matters and that it's being heard. So I think those are really the best that we can do given the circumstances that we're in. And I think at the end of the day, a large part of the people that we are having at our games are the diehard hockey fans. So if it's a tight game and you're giving them that little cue to get into it and to get excited, they're going to do it pretty willingly, pretty quickly. So just giving them that opportunity to still be engaged, I think, is pretty much the best we could do.
Yeah, one of the great things, and we saw this last summer in Macon, if there's any benefit or any bright spot out of this nightmare, is teams have realized that the one-third capacity crowd is not nearly as cool as a sold-out crowd. So focus on sellouts and don't spend any time trying to get a one-third capacity crowd on a Tuesday because they've just witnessed what that crowd is like and how unappealing it is. So now going forward for 21-22, sellouts become even more important because everyone's now just seeing the atmosphere so much bigger, better, and greater.
Yeah, so for sure.
About 21, the teams are already thinking about 21-22. Now, your regular season doesn't end until June. Your playoffs run around July 4th. What are you advising your teams on renewals, rehiring staff, marketing timelines to make sure the 21-22 season is as successful as possible? Obviously, what they're doing this year is a little bit scattered, but what does it look like as you go forward for next year? When are they starting the usual sales and marketing process?
Yeah, it's interesting, and we just had a call league-wide about a week or two ago kind of discussing renewals for the 21-22 season, and it's kind of been a mixed bag of what we've seen so far in terms of some teams are out there, they're doing it already, and others are kind of taking a wait-and-see approach to maybe get closer to when the start of the next season will be to see what, you know, seating capacities might be, any restrictions that they'll still be dealing with, the progress of the vaccine, things of that nature. But to me, what I am getting out there to the teams and trying to get them to do is take it as though it was a normal season in terms of promoting and moving forward for 21-22. Because at this point, we're prepared to start in mid-October as we normally would for a regular season. So all of our teams at this point in first or second week of February would be on sale for the most part, or at least very close to being on sale with their season tickets for 21-22. So that's where we should be, I think, right now. And even if your team isn't playing for this season, you can still play on the fact that there is hockey being played right now, and that's the best time and the best opportunity for our teams to sell hockey is when there's hockey going on, because we all know and we've seen it over the years that the summer months are not necessarily the most prominent for selling season tickets for hockey. So this is the time to take advantage of it. And another thing that I'll point out that we learned from the calls that has been hugely successful is help the teams both that are playing now and that have suspended for the 2021 season is teams that are on automatic renewal, whether it be just the membership model or season ticket contracts. Anyway, the teams that have 12-month payment plans and have their customers adjusted and comfortable with and used to being charged every month that membership cost to pay for their tickets, those are the teams that have had the most success, because some of them are already paid in full for the 21-22 season because they just didn't stop charging throughout the pandemic. Some may have for a month or two, or they've, you know, taken it on a case-by-case basis, of course, which I think you'd always do with that type of model, especially during a pandemic. But those people, those teams are in position now where they have their base ready to go for next year, and those people are already used to paying for their tickets during the summer months when hockey's typically not going on. So in a season where they're suspended and there's no hockey, they're used to paying at that point because they realize that the benefit will lie ahead of them. Now they have, you know, what is 8 months or so where they won't have to make any payments, and they're already paid in full for next year.
Awesome. All right, last question about staffing for the young people listening to this. When should anybody looking for a job in sports or trying to get back into sports after they've been laid off, when would you think ECHL teams will start rehiring ticket salespeople?
Yeah, I think it's going to vary based on the ownership group and the situation that they're in. But I think as we get closer towards the spring, that's when we're going to start seeing the majority of hiring. From what I've heard from the teams that I've spoken to, that's when the majority of teams, I think, that aren't playing this season are going to look to start bringing greater portions of their staff back. Some, you know, have kept staff on, some in limited capacity, some still to their full capacities or at least close to it. But I think in the spring is when we're really going to start to see the hiring pick up from our team. So anyone who's a senior in college now looking for a job come May, I think the ECHL will be a good place to look, because we're going to have some teams that need to fill some positions, and they'll be looking to do so quickly.
Awesome. Rich Bello, ECHL Team Service, thank you so much for your time. We'll let you get back to work. You've got teams playing hockey. You got to help them sell tickets. Best of luck the rest of the season.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.